Nope. Seen it. Oh, nah.
Can't find something to watch? Introducing Sky Stream. It's Sky without the dish. Watch unmissable Sky exclusives like The Regime and Netflix too, all over super reliable Sky full fibre broadband. Get Sky Stream, Sky Broadband and Netflix for just €50 a month. Search Sky Stream. Availability subject location. New customers only. 12-month minimum term. Stream and broadband sold separately. Further terms apply. For more info, see sky.ie/speeds.
On this week's Big Tech Show, how will the latest developments in artificial intelligence affect your life? Will you get new powerful personal assistants? Are you in danger of something terrible happening? We explain what's going on.
Just a couple of weeks ago, Anthropic, which is OpenAI competitor, their startup lab, actually founded by former OpenAI employees, they actually eclipsed GPT-4 only just a couple of weeks ago with their latest model, and the internet went crazy. This is just better than GPT-4 at everything. So OpenAI had to respond to that.
The Big Tech Show, available on all podcast platforms.
Well, after a busy and frantic few weeks of Action Championship 2022, drew breath over the weekend as Leinster Hurling took a break. But in Munster, Limerick and Tipperary played out an absolute cracker, with the All-Ireland champions coming out on the right side of the result after a late flurry. While in football, Cork and Kerry finally locked horns at Porky Rin, while Donegal and Cavan also played out a very entertaining clash up in Ulster. Welcome to the Throw On Podcast. Will Slattery here with you as always. We will be joined in just a few minutes by Colm Keyes to go over all the football action. And in part two of the show, former Dublin hurler and footballer Conal Keeney will join us to discuss the hurling game in Munster, as well as check in on how Dublin are getting on ahead of their game against Kilkenny next weekend. But for now, Michael Verney is here with me. Michael, I suppose it wasn't kind of the blockbuster weekend we've had over the last couple of weeks, but still there was plenty of intrigue.
There was, yeah. You mentioned there was only one kind of major hurling game, but there were two very important minor games, which I have a serious vested interest in. A great win for the Offaly Minors against Dublin. They hadn't beaten Dublin since 2005, I think, in the Leinster Minor Championship. So a big win over them. And they're playing Laois in the Leinster final for the first time ever. I think it's only the third time in history that neither Kilkenny or Wexford have been involved in the Leinster Minor Hurling final. So a fairly novel pairing. I think it's on next Monday. It's in either Port Laois or Tullamore. So there'd be a big Midlands derby. There'd be a good old cracker in the Midlands for the next week. But good signs for both counties. Laois obviously probably struggling in the Leinster round robin. Offaly, you know, in and around the top of the Joe McDonough, but good signs for the future. With smaller counties like that, sometimes you can nearly hang your hat on a good minor team. You know you're going to get a lot of them through. So we'd be hopeful of getting a good result in the final and then carrying it through with a lot of those guys coming through to play 20 and senior over the next 4 or 5 years with a bit of luck.
Yeah, and I know you were at the Limerick Tipperary game over the weekend. If I'm not mistaken, that was maybe your first time seeing them live in this year's championship.
Yeah.
But, you know, Do you glean anything extra by watching them in person?
I know you do. Yeah, you always see bits and pieces that you just don't see on the TV. Particularly, like, there was a point, you know, that Barry Nash got in the second half, and you're just seeing the 1-2s and the shimmies and the runs that he's making that are totally off the ball and totally off screen. So you do learn an awful lot from that. Even just, you know, I think, and I'll go into it later on, you know, how Tip tried to shut down Dermot Burns was really interesting to see, and probably something that you probably couldn't see on TV with them leaving Dan Morrissey predominantly free on the other side. You do learn an awful lot, and they probably weren't at their best yesterday, but I suppose maybe they didn't have to be. They were at their best when they needed to be, and they still got the result while playing badly, which can never be a bad thing.
Yeah, well, we'll dig more into the hurling with Conal Keeney in part two, but for now, it's time to talk football. We're delighted to have Colm Keyes with us. And Colm, we might focus first with that Cork and Kerry game in Porky Rin on Saturday night. After all, this was the focus and venue controversy about where the game was going to be played. Cork got their wish in playing the game on home soil, but Kerry got the right result from their point of view. You know, were you surprised with how the game unfolded? Cork obviously keeping it very close for so long, but then that late surge meant that Kerry still won, you know, pretty comprehensively.
Yeah, I suppose, well, Cork were able to hang into the game for that length of time because they put together a very, very good defensive plan. And I think that revolved around Sean Powter, who had been injured since the Sigerson Cup final back in February. But he was a late addition to the team, a surprise late addition to the team. And he's a player that's been beset with a lot of injuries, but he's a really, really talented player that offers them solutions in a number of areas. And this solution of playing him as one of the sweepers with David Clifford in mind, really, really worked out well for them. I think that was probably the most surprising aspect, like, that Cork were able to, as they did through Sean Meehan last year, were able to keep tabs on Clifford so well. I thought the venue, first of all, you mentioned at the outset, the venue worked well for Cork. It did give them a cause. They were able to translate that into their performance, the aggression that they brought to the performance. The crowd were very tightly packed around it. I'm not so sure about dimensions actually helping them in any way, but certainly the atmosphere and the idea that this wasn't certainly the feel of a more open Fitzgerald Stadium where they've taken some pretty severe beatings over the last few years. So on that front, I think the Cork management justified, and the players in their stance. The crowd was accommodated in its entirety, I think. But all around, I think the atmosphere lent itself to the type of aggressive and confrontational approach that Cork took to it. And I think the sweeper around Clifford, it's something that you're going to see. Certainly, I think the league final against Mayo informed that. And it worked out well until ultimately they ran out of a bit of gas, and those Cork substitutes, or those Kerry substitutes, in particular David Moran, I feel really settled Kerry down, and they were able to take it on from there and win pretty well. A different way than what they would have won, obviously, last year. But certainly Kerry will benefit from a contest like that, and I think they will have welcomed it.
Speaking of aggression, Will, I don't know if Cork took any inspiration from Roy Keane, who was in attendance, but they definitely showed that bit of aggression in the first hour. And as Colin says, you probably just, it's just a Division 1 team coming up against a team that was at the bottom of Division 2. Cork probably emptied the tank. You know, the reserves that they were calling on in the final 15 or 20 minutes just like pale in comparison experience-wise to what Kerry were bringing in. But I didn't expect much watching this game, been honest with you, and I thoroughly enjoyed it for the guts of an hour until Kerry eventually pulled away. But I do agree with Colm there. I think a lot of guys, probably on the Cork side, went above and beyond to make sure that they were on the field for this fixture. Sean Powter being one of them, Ian Maguire being another, who made a miraculous recovery from a hand injury as well and looked in bother at several stages during the game, but just kept trucking on. So in fairness to Cork, hopefully, you think from their point of view, something to build upon going into the qualifiers. From a Kerry point of view, I 100% agree with Colin. They weren't road tested last year. At least they got a really good challenge for an hour the other night. And that you'd hope from their point of view that that would serve them well when it comes to the latter stages.
And I suppose that, Michael, the concentration on Clifford opened avenues for a lot of other players. Stephen O'Brien in particular used this race. He's the one line-breaking half-forward probably that Kerry have. He can go by players. Paddy Clifford can do it to a degree too. But O'Brien is always really good at burrowing his way past the player, and he gives him that bit of gain in the half-forward line. And also, obviously, Dermot O'Connor is an evolving prospect. You know, he's in that Clifford, Sean O'Shea genre from as a minor, and it's taken his time. He's only 23, I suppose, so maybe that's a bit unfair to him. But he had an injury last year, picked up in the Munster final against Cork, carried that into the All-Ireland semi-final, didn't start that. But he's a really, really promising player that's really beginning to stretch out now. And you could see the physical power he brought. That's the one takeaway. One of the takeaways from me from Saturday night for Kerry was his continued progression. Thought he was very, very good during the league, particularly at some of the more difficult venues up in Inneskeen and in Armagh, places like that. He acquitted himself physically very well. And I think with all the pressure on Clifford, David Clifford, and even Paddy Clifford, and to a lesser degree, maybe Sean O'Shea, I think he's the one player that will really thrive in that. And gaps for himself and Stephen O'Brien certainly appeared on Saturday night.
Just on that as well, I think it's probably something you're going to see later on in the year as well. David Moran, that's not to say he will be an impact man the whole season. I'm not sure how that will pan out. But if in the last 15 or 20 minutes of a game, you have three guys parked across the middle of the field like they had the other night in Moran, O'Connor and Jack Barry, like Cork had nowhere to go. Kerry pressed up high, they had to go long, and you have three of the best fielders in the game finishing it out and closing out the game for Kerry. So that's something you're probably going to see in you know, bigger and harder championship games towards the latter stages, where Kerry will try and make teams go along. And that's the sort of, at the end of a game, and that's the sort of thing that where Moore and O'Connor and these guys will absolutely thrive upon it. So I think we saw a few glimpses of things that we're going to see in latter stages, and that we'll probably be talking about in a couple of months' time.
And the other thing is they kept another clean sheet, Kerry. That's 12 from 12 games now. If you include the three McGrath Cup games, and you know, you can say, well, they're only McGrath Cup, but the team has been sent out with the same philosophy. Whatever team it is, the same philosophy is to keep out goals. Goals hurt Kerry badly, obviously, in last year's All-Ireland semi-final. A new management has come in and their philosophy is quite clearly keep goals out by whatever measure possible. And they've done that once again. So they've conceded two goals in 12 games. That's in between 8 league matches, 3 McGrath Cup, and now a championship game. They've conceded two goals. One of those was a penalty, and I was at the game and in the scheme that probably never should have been. The only goal they've conceded is to Tyrone. So that's a really good position for a Kerry team who is determined to shut out as they did, knowing that it has been their most vulnerable point in recent years.
Yeah, and they have a 3-week break now until they play the Munster final against either Limerick or Tipperary. And Michael, from a Cork perspective, you know, the qualifier route, there's already some big names in there that, you know, we've discussed over the last few weeks. Do you think they could have a kick in them? Do you think that they could go on a bit of a run, potentially get to an All-Ireland quarter-final, or do you think their race has maybe run already?
Yeah, you're really going into a shark tank. There's no easy games. With due respect to maybe Division 3 and 4 teams in the previous guys of the qualifiers, you might get a tune-up and, you know, be ready to hop off a bigger team then in the following round. There's going to be no easy games. At the end of the day, they kicked, 11 points the other night. While it was good for long stages, it was probably, you know, better defensively maybe than going forward. They took some great points in the second half, off probably limited opportunities. One guy that really stood out was probably Cathal O'Mahony. I think that was his first championship start, but he'd probably been well flagged from a few years back with the under-20s. But they're going to need an awful lot more attack and threat if they're going to trouble the Mayos, the Tyrones of this world. So they're probably going to be under pressure to go on a run. But again, like, what do you need? Two games to be back in the, you know, the real latter stages of the All-Ireland again. I'd be surprised if they went on a run. But they could get matched up against a couple of teams of similar ability. If they do, they have a chance. But do I see them taking a big scalp along the way? I don't, if I'm honest.
But one interesting part of the game, as I think Colm and yourself mentioned, was their ability to maybe shut down David Clifford to an extent. I think of the three matches Kerry have played against Cork since COVID in the championship, I think he scored maybe 4 points in play, 3 points in play across the three games, which I think most teams in the country will be delighted with that sort of return. Colm, you know, you were at the Donegal-Cavan game yesterday, which I think played out in a much more interesting and exciting fashion than a lot of people maybe had predicted. I know Donegal, obviously, having been beaten in the 2020 Ulster final, were maybe gunning for this one, but Cavan for long periods played some great football and really looked like an upset could have been on the cards.
It felt like there could be. It was a remote enough, even though, you know, with 13, 14 minutes to go, it was 14 each, and Cavan had come back from three down at one stage, and they'd led by three in the first half at one stage, and in the second half they'd closed a 3-point, a really good point to turnover from Pádraig Faulkner, and it felt like a significant moment. Personally, I just felt that they were flagging a little bit in the last quarter. Even before the goals went in, I just felt that maybe Donegal were picking up the pace a little bit. They were breaking. There was runners breaking faster and harder, and maybe just gaps were starting to open up there. But all told, it was a really creditable performance from Cavan. I felt it validated what they did 2 years ago to win the Ulster title, because really, you know, this was never a 6-point game. The goals completely distorted the scoreline, and there were quite fortunate goals, because in both cases there were point attempts that dropped short and weren't dealt with by the Cavan defence, and it worked out in both cases for Donegal. But I felt really creditable, and as I said, validated what they did. Cavan are a really good championship team. You just have to write off what happened in the league last year to send them down to Division 4. It was just there was probably a bit of a hangover from the Ulster Championship win, and just the way it happened. And I think in an 8-team Division 3 last year, they would have survived and probably got promotion this year from Division 3. I just feel they are certainly a Division 2 team that's playing well below themselves in league football, and that distorts really where they are at the moment. Obviously, they will be the strong Tailteann Cup team if they put their mind to it and really focus on it. But they came with a decent plan. They put a lot of good long ball in around where James Smith and sometimes Thomas Gallagher, Patrick Lynch, who's been a real find for them. Obviously, they've known about him for a while, but he's really quickly adapted to inter-county football. And Brendan McCall came into this game riding high and a very, very good reputation for what he did during the league and obviously against Armagh as well. And in the end, Donegal had to switch back on Ben Gallagher for a while on him in the second half on Patrick Lynch to curtail him. So that's a measure of how quickly he has asserted himself at senior football. But I felt through Smith and through Galligan, they brought a lot of power, a lot of aerial ability there that really that troubled Donegal at times. And it's ironic that two aerial balls that they didn't deal with themselves were ultimately their downfall.
Yeah, Michael, and from a Donegal perspective, that's them into their 10th Ulster final in 12 seasons, I think, since Jim McGuinness got them there in 2011, which is a very strong record considering how competitive Ulster has been. You know, where do you think they're at overall? Like, you know, obviously, they haven't been able to get over the quarterfinal hump under Declan Bonner. Have you seen enough of them in the championship thus far with their two wins over Armagh and Cavan to suggest they might be able to go a bit further this year?
I suppose just on the 10 Ulster finals in 12 years, we probably... I don't know that we judge them harshly, but they have been very competitive, consistently competitive and consistently at a high level. It's just probably that we're always looking for a team to break through that glass ceiling. They obviously did in 2012, and you're thinking that there's a potential there to do it again. It hasn't happened in recent years. I'm not so sure, you know, if we've seen enough to warrant thinking that it could happen this year again. As Colm says, like, They got their lot from, you know, a team that was playing in Division 4 throughout the spring, and life was made very difficult for them. Colm has been kind, even I'd say, and that second ball that dropped in, if that was a shot, it was a fairly badly miscued shot. It probably was, but just badly executed, and it just kind of fell to the right man. And the first goal was a bit of a freak. Like, it's basically a leg thrown at it, and it just kind of hit off his leg almost and went in.
A tidy finish.
You could say a tidy finish. Good reflexes. And I think Colm had it in his piece this morning in the paper, the irony maybe of, you know, that Cavan leaving a high ball into the edge of the square in 2020 and got the goal that they needed to beat them in that famous day in November. And Donegal left two kind of very speculative efforts in around the square and got the rewards for it yesterday. But I don't know. They'll get their fill of it again, I'd say, in an Ulster final, regardless of who it is, whether it's Derry or Monaghan. But they're not operating currently at a level that would suggest that they're going to be All-Ireland contenders. So maybe there's a couple of more gears in them. That remains to be seen.
I'd actually think that Conor O'Donnell goal, given the amount of reaction time he had, I thought he did very well to shift his body to an angle where he had just a split second to make contact. And all it was just to make the contact. And he did. And Raymond Galligan had come off his line at that stage. So he wasn't there to cover it. He was in the thick of it with Michael Murphy and Killian Brady and Killian Clark at that stage. And obviously he had advanced. He had seen Murphy under the dropping ball. And even though two of his colleagues was there, he felt instinctively, I need to get out and help these guys to get this ball away. But it didn't work out. And I suppose, in one respect, it shows the threat that Murphy is, even when he's not on the ball, when he's lurking around in that area. You saw it in the league match against Dublin. He's such a menace around there for teams. And even if it doesn't work out, he's always making them think. And in an indirect way, he really created that goal just by his presence there. But I thought a really good finish from Conor O'Donnell. I have to say, it was a split second he had, and whatever way he moved his left leg to make contact, it worked, obviously.
Colm, just a quick one on Murphy. Was Murphy, like, you know, he was in full forward for the two goals. Was he there predominantly? Was he, I know I saw him back the field a good bit as well. Was it a case that they just moved him in full forward in the last 2 minutes, or where did he operate?
I thought he played quite a bit, Michael. He played quite a bit inside. Obviously, he does move out from time to time, and he came out in the second half, and especially towards the end when the game needed a bit of locking down. But predominantly inside, won't say he was completely full forward, maybe just out around the D quite a bit. He involved in a lot of assists. He obviously kicked a very good second half point. And I thought all around he was very productive. And just some of his layoffs were very clever. So it's just his presence all around. I think we're seeing a bit more of him in full forward, even during the league. For the games he played there, he was quite prominent there as well. So I think I think, yes, he has been pushed in there a lot more and they're trying to work off him. And he's such a good distributor of the ball as well. I mean, he will almost always pick the right pass. And I think for the rest of the campaign, we will see him in a much more advanced position.
Yeah, certainly one of the great debates in the GA even this morning, Eamon Sweeney writing in the Irish Independent about whether he should be stationed in and full forward for with more regularity. Michael, just on the Tailteann Cup then, obviously Cavan favourites probably, you know, I know we don't know every team who's in it just yet, but given the strength of their performance yesterday, you know, it's been interesting just listening to some of the managers of teams who will be competing in it and maybe their fear that it won't get the coverage or the showcase that they think it warrants to get players interested. Like, I know it hasn't started yet, but what's your kind of read on that element of it at the moment? Would you be fearful that maybe it kind of gets lost in the shuffle?
Yeah, no, I would be, Will, just because I'm looking at, you know, I'm following Offaly obviously closely in the Joe McDonagh Cup, and with the best will in the world, there's great games going on in the McDonagh Cup. Like, they're just being overshadowed by what is usually, you know, five senior championship games being played that weekend between Leinster and Munster. And it's only natural that they're going to be in the shadows as a result of that. So the Tailteann Cup kicks off at the end of this month. I know, as you say, we don't know all the teams involved. You'd have to say it hasn't exactly been front and centre promotion-wise by the GAA at the moment. They're kind of running out of time in that respect as well. And, you know, every day, when I pick up the paper or look online, somebody's calling or urging on the GAA to promote it a bit more. So, like, I do think that's a big part of it. This is the first year of the Tailteann Cup. Usually, with something, you know, you really go gung ho to get it front and center that first year, and then you know, not coast off the momentum, but carry that momentum into the next couple of years. I was chatting to Stephen King, who was the Cavan captain when they won in '97, and he was just saying that, you know, if they don't get the Tailteann Cup this year, that'll be dead in the water. And there is a fear of that because games will be lost. And there's another element in that as well. I'm a big fan of the split season, but I do think we probably need another between 2 to 4 weeks just to space out the championship a bit more, just to give games more of a time to breed. And within that, potentially you could have, you know, a couple of Tailteann Cup weekends where, you know, they're the big games that have been focused on. Also, you really need to be looking at double header games in the Tailteann Cup where they're, you know, a pre-appetizer for a big championship game that's following. If it's, you know, we can't have the case where there's 300 or 400 people at a Tailteann Cup game when there's loads of other things going on. We need to kind of, you know, be clever, I suppose, in how we organise games around that. But I would have a worry that it's going to be overlooked. I know the final has been played before the All-Ireland semi-final, but, you know, you want eyes on the Tailteann Cup long before the final phase. So there is a bit of a worry in that respect. And it's going to be interesting to see over the next 2 to 3 weeks before it kicks off, how hard or not the GAA go at, you know, promoting it and marketing it to make sure that everybody knows it's going on, who are the teams involved, when are the games on, how many games, if any, are going to be on TV before the final stages. I think that'll be fascinating to see.
Yeah, just in terms of the schedule, I was looking at the upcoming weekends to see what games were on, and I believe the Tailteann Cup semi-finals have a Sunday to itself, the weekend of the All-Ireland hurling quarter-finals, and those games I think are both scheduled for RT. So the semi-finals, as far as I know, will be on TV as well as the final, and then it'll be interesting to see, as you say, what they do for some of the other games. Colin, what's your view on it? You know, having been talking to the various players and teams, in your own opinion, do you think it's going to be something that will capture the attention, that will work long-term?
Well, it'll capture the attention when it gets to semi-final stage, because there'll be nothing else for the attention to be captured by. As you said just there, Will, the semi-finals are going to be live TV on the prime time slots, shall we call them, 2 o'clock and 4 o'clock on a Sunday afternoon. So that'll focus minds. But maybe, just maybe, there will be a switch off from the wider audience too on that. That'll be interesting to see what are viewing figures like for it. What's the general interest? Does it create any talking points? And obviously the final being a curtain raiser to one of the All-Ireland semi-finals. We see how that plays out too. There's a general body of thought that it should have aligned completely with the All-Ireland final, that the minor final, and that should have been dispensed with, and that the Tailteann Cup should be the curtain raiser on All-Ireland final day. And even if it has had impacts, it would really embellish the status of it. But I'd have to say, I think it will be a little bit lost in the early stages. Even right now, it's impossible to determine the formats because... and maybe there's not an awareness there that the first two rounds, the first round and the quarterfinals, will be run off on a geographical basis. So you'll be looking at north and south. So effectively, the teams in the northern half will come from Ulster and Connacht and possibly Longford, and then the Leinster, the South Leinster teams from, say, Westmeath, Offaly, Laois down. That's if Westmeath are there, of course. I shouldn't have said that. But if it's them, and they could be one of the teams there, if they don't beat Kildare, they'll be in the southern half. So there's a lot to sort out. So from a promotion point of view, well, you can't really promote anything just yet until you know exactly what the constituents are. So that's a difficulty from one point of view. And even now, it's unknown as to whether there will be a preliminary round. That's obviously to pare down the number of teams. So if Westmeath and Tipperary are in the mix and everything goes to form, you will have 16 teams plus New York who are guaranteed a quarterfinal place. So you must get the 16 teams down to 7, and that will require 2 preliminary round fixtures in that regard. So there's a lot of scenarios to play out between now and the draw on Monday morning. And really, we don't know who's going to be north and who's going to be south. There's a rough sketch of who it will be. So from a point of view of promotion, difficult to promote it just yet, but I would expect and hope that it will be a lot more aggressive in terms of the focus on it in the weeks after next Monday.
And just to finish up on the football, Michael, Galway Leitrim was the other kind of prominent championship game. Galway winning well to set up a Division 2 final rematch against Roscommon in the Connacht final. Another step in the right direction for Galway.
Yeah, and clinical enough, kind of winning as they should have been, which is, I'm sure, Pádraic Joyce will definitely take that on board. And, you know, they have a bit of a revenge mission against Roscommon. There's not going to be anything in that, and there never was going to be. And you just wonder, going into that league final, did the effects of maybe playing a weakened team the week before that, did that have any effect on even their psyche going into that final? But that was a brilliant league final. It was probably the best game of football I played that weekend, including the Division 1 final. The quality was really, really high, and both Roscommon and Galway are going to really fancy this. So yeah, that should be a belter of a game. And realistically, going into the semi-final, what were Galway hoping for? Just a comprehensive result, no major injury scares. So I'd say they're happy enough going into it. Yeah, no, that should potentially be one of the games of the season, I'd say, with an awful lot at stake between two sides who have been fairly feisty down through the years. So that should be a cracker.
Colm, I'll give you the last word then. Do you think Galway can kind of change the result from the Division 2 final and get a win in the Connacht final?
Yes, I do. I think they're moving very nicely in the right direction, driven on by Paul Conroy, who's really having a renaissance towards the end of his career. If it is to be the end of his career, obviously he's in that zone now, but he's playing really impressively. He really caught my eye against Mayo. A lot of power about Galway, and one thing, I suppose, you look at the scoreline from yesterday's game. They didn't hang about. They didn't show any mercy, no sentiment. They just went and racked up a big score and won convincingly. And that's really what the top teams do. And that's what Galway have to do as well. So I think they're coming together. Wouldn't expect a whole lot between Galway and Roscommon. And that's been the template for their games over the last few years. But I do think Galway are heading the right direction. I think they will have the edge in this game, particularly up front.
Great stuff, Colin. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks, Will.
Well, we're delighted to be joined on this week's throw-in by Conal Keeney. Conal, how are you?
How you doing? Not too bad now, thanks.
Yeah, great to have you on. It was a quieter weekend in the Hurling Championship after a pretty exciting and busy last couple of weeks, but still the game we did get yesterday, Limerick-Tipperary, turned out to be a pretty cracking encounter. Limerick getting out on the right side of the result just about at the end, but Tipperary showed a lot of fight. Were you impressed with how close they took the All-Ireland Champions?
If you were to read all the predictions coming in and pundits, Tipperary had no chance. And even in the bookies, they weren't giving them any chance at all. So like, that's a great position for a team nearly to be in. No matter what happens, that it can only be good. So obviously Tipperary, especially though that team, are hurting, and they don't like obviously getting beaten. And the manner to which they're being spoken about, I suppose, is probably irritating as well. So it was a good opportunity to try and... to show what they're made of, and some of those younger lads that are there and are really top level hurlers, and they just haven't really got the chance to win it. And look, the easy thing to say is Tipperary were missing so many of their so called leaders over the years, and it's they're in a rebuilding process, but it just goes to show that they weren't far off yesterday, albeit maybe they ran out of steam maybe in the last 8-10 minutes or whatever, and Limerick kind of came through in the end, but. It was still a very spirited performance from Tipperary, even though that's probably no good to them really at this stage. But still, it's something to build on rather than what we've seen previous.
Yeah, Michael, from your perspective, like, did Tipperary do things in that game that you think other teams could replicate in terms of troubling Limerick?
Yeah, there were definitely a couple of things. Well, I was really impressed with how they shut down Dermot Burns, particularly in the first half. Gerard Brown was picking him up. He was floating everywhere and anywhere because he kind of knows generally Burns is a half-back, right half-back, and he will not follow. They really tried to hold their ground. So Gerard Brown got a good bit of joy. He got 3 points off him. Another thing as well is that when the ball was over that side of the pitch, I thought Tipperary nearly flooded that wing really well. They didn't allow Burns to get free shots away like he had the week previous. And on a counter of that, because maybe Dan Morrissey on the other wing doesn't hurt you as much from long distance and maybe is not as prolific as a shooter as Burns is, they kind of left him free at different times. So I thought that was one thing in particular that really impressed me. They pushed up on the Limerick puck out at times. They were getting in their faces. They were getting hurls in, getting bodies in. I know Eddie Brennan had it in the paper today. Like, sometimes it just does come down to, like, you know, how much heart you're showing on a given day. You could probably say in the Clare game, you know, Tipperary were off the pace. They weren't getting stuck in. There was, you know, very little physicality from their end. It was the polar opposite yesterday. They really got in Limerick's faces. And the one thing from a Limerick point of view that you'd have to admire is, and Conal will tell you, from, you know, playing big games, when it's going against you, it's very hard to turn it in game and turn it around in your favour. But that's the brilliance of Limerick, that they're able to do that. Things, so many things can be misfiring for them, but they're still able to produce it. And I suppose having the bench that they have and calling in the guys that they did, and David Reedy getting a point and Conor Boylan barreling through and winning a free and then getting a goal as well, having those options, they were probably the options that Tip didn't have from the players, some of the players that they were missing. But that's probably the thing that impressed me most about Limerick, just how cool they were when, you know, it looked like everything was going wrong for them. It looked like not the exact same as the All-Ireland final or the All-Ireland semi-final in 2019 against Kilkenny. But there was a lot of things going against them. A lot of guys not performing up to their level. You know, a lot of bad striking, bad touches, which is uncharacteristic for them. But they were still able to find a way. And that's one of the great signs of a champion.
Yeah, Conal, what stands out to you watching Limerick?
Well, I think exactly what was just said there. Yesterday was so impressive. The fact that, like, look, I've played in games before when things go against you and, like, that's infectious in a team. You know, it doesn't go well for me and I'm looking across and it's not going well for someone else. And, you know, everyone's looking for something else and for someone else to do something. And if it doesn't start happening, it can be very difficult. It's a big hole that you go down and, you know, you just want to get out of there. But I think for Limerick to bring on the subs that they can bring on, they kind of freshen it up and they get the game going again and kind of help that process to get out of it. And I know everyone always says with a manager, it's, you got to trust in your process and believe in what you're doing. And Limerick just do that down to a T. Like, if that was any other team, like, you definitely see the panic set in and that you wouldn't be able to recover from it. But for them yesterday, like, they just stuck to it and they believe that if they stick to it for the full game, they'll get out of it. And that's exactly what happened.
I think that's the most impressive thing, Will. They don't deviate at all. There's even, like, there was a stage before halftime there where Tom Morrissey was hooked twice within about a couple of seconds. It's something that very rarely happens. Then Dan Morrissey threw up a ball and, like, nearly missed the ball. He completely mishit it. It went about 10 yards. Then Darragh O'Donovan has a ball and goes to switch hands to hand pass, ends up dropping his hurling, giving away a free. And all these things happening. And then all of a sudden, they're just still able to keep on an even keel. And it's as Colin says there, such a difficult thing to do when things are going against you. But, like, there are a couple of really big leaders standing up near the end. Gerard Hegarty mightn't have done the damage on the scoreboard, but, like, just in the last 15 minutes, like, there was no end to him. Same with Tom Morrissey. Sean Finn was just brilliant coming out with ball after ball. Declan Hannan coming up and getting an inspirational score as well. And yet again, it's this scoring burst, usually in the second half. I think it was 2-5 to no score yesterday from the 68th minute. I think from 7 or 8 minutes after that, I think it was 10 points to 1 against Waterford in the second half. And they did blitz against Cork as well. And, like, we're talking about them not playing well and they're still hitting that 30-point barrier. Like, a team not playing particularly well and been shut down for an hour and they've still hit the 30-point, that kind of magic 30-point barrier for the third championship game in a row. It's just seriously impressive.
Conal, do you think Limerick were looking not to get a red card? Like, you know, that Hull by Aaron Galan, who had another very strong game, you know, getting 2-1 from play. You know, was he fortunate not to get a red card?
Look, I've seen them given as a red card, but like, to be fair to Galan, I think he was kind of pulling out of it. Like, his two hands weren't on the hurt, so it was one hand kind of a flick near the end. Look, it was a wild pull. I think a yellow was fair. To get a red for that, it would be a little bit harsh, I would have thought. But reckless, but you see them all the time, like, to a degree. And look, it would have been wrong, I think, a red card. That's my opinion now, anyway. But just to touch back on the Limerick thing. Limerick playing kind of poorly the last day. What a position for the management to be in. They can use that now to beat them for the next couple of weeks coming into a Munster final. And it's just incredible to think that they win with that margin at the end, and still they have the management have loads like to go after at them for the next couple of weeks coming into a Munster final. You know, so it's what a place to be in for the management, really.
And Colin, let's take a step back and maybe have a look at Leinster as well. I know there was no games over the weekend, but a huge one coming this Saturday, Dublin Kilkenny at Parnell Park. You know, where do you think Dublin are at? They got that impressive victory down in Wexford Park. They do seem primed to, you know, maybe take another step forward. But in years past, maybe when they've had a big victory, they haven't always been able to kick on. So how do you assess where they're at the moment?
Very hard to judge. I wouldn't take a look. Yes, it was a good victory against Wexford, but that would have been expected, like, for, especially up in Dublin. Like, yes, it's a tough place to go, but I don't think Wexford are the team as they were. We would have expected to go down there and to get a result. I think this game in Parnell Park is the one that has been, this and the Galway game, but especially this because it's in Parnell, has been earmarked a long, long time ago that this is where we need to get a result. And look, obviously we need to get a result to have a better chance of going through. And I think Kilkenny are probably in that little bit of a transition. They're not sure where they're really at, how they're going well, or they're not going well. And it's a perfect opportunity to bring them to Parnell Park and to really physically go after them. And I think the game in the league where Kilkenny absolutely destroyed Dublin is very much in their minds as well. And I think any time you get a team to Parnell Park at Championship, it's for Dublin, oh, will always fancy themselves, no matter who it is in Parnell Park. So I wouldn't be surprised if Dublin come out the right side of it on the weekend.
Yeah, Michael, how are you looking at the game?
Yeah, it's kind of hard to assess. You look at Dublin against, like, on form lines, you know, they probably struggled over Laois. Were only in maybe second or third gear against Westmeath. Got that result against Wexford that they needed to get. That's kind of nearly put one foot in, you know, at least the preliminary All-Ireland quarter-final. So they're in a good position coming with Kilkenny coming to Parnell Park at the weekend. If Kilkenny had gotten a draw against Galway, you know, they'd be a lot more maybe confident coming or making that trip up at the weekend. But like, they're really playing for their lives, Kilkenny in particular. They have to get a result, a positive result of some kind. So it's going to be intriguing. Like, to the best of my memory, I think when Conal was playing in 2013, that replay in Port Laois, that's the last time I think Dublin beat Kilkenny in Championship. So like, that's 9 years later, what we probably thought was a big breakthrough moment, and obviously it was a breakthrough because Dublin ended up winning Leinster after, but we probably thought it would be a more regular occurrence maybe for Dublin to be beating Kilkenny in Championship. So it's an opportunity knocks for Dublin at the weekend. Number one, to get one over in Kilkenny. Number two, probably if they can get a victory, they basically have one foot in the Leinster final as well.
Yeah, I think that in that opening round robin game in 2018 as well, they came very close to beating them in Parnell Park. I think a very late goal from Michael Kenny got a victory for them that day. Conal, like, what's the kind of mentality for Dublin hurlers when they come up against Kilkenny? As Michael said, there hasn't been that many victories over them in the Championship. Do they loom quite large psychologically when you're going head to head with them?
If you rewind a few years when I was involved, it was always a chance to test yourself against them. Look, they were the standard bearers for years. Okay, this probably dropped a little bit now, but it's still, you know, Cody's there, and Cody never wants to lose to anyone, and we've seen that the last day. So the mentality of Dublin is start the game at a ferocious pace and be as physical as possible everywhere on the field. Like, if the ball is up the other end of the field, you're physically on top of your man, trying to put him off, and to basically get to the last 15 minutes of the game and be able to shout, and then that's where you're really going to go after it. Then you'd hope that all the training that you've probably done previous is to give you that fitness level to really go strong in the last 15 minutes. But it's really to try and, as much as possible in Parnell Park, it's to bully them as much as possible and to be physically in their faces. Because if you try and hurl with them, I think when I was there, go toe-to-toe hurling with them, you might as well forget about it, because they're just going to destroy you. You know, they're going to be flicking ball around everywhere. So it's really in that middle third to start winning those breaks and making sure that if any man moves, that you're hitting them. That's really what we used to think about. Even when under Daly, it was be as physical as possible from the word go, and try and rule the skies and the ball on the ground, and do what you have to do to make sure you win that possession.
And you mentioned the Parnell Park factor earlier. Like, could you give us a bit of an insight into what it's like to play a big championship game there? Obviously, you would have played in Croke Park, you know, numerous occasions with Dublin footballers and hurlers, and had some good victories there. But what does the Parnell Park factor, you know, bring to the table?
When you get a full house there, like, the crowd are on top of you, no more than any other place. But the fact that it's a home game for Dublin, like, the lads know it inside out. They train there most evenings, and when the crowd are there, you just feel like that you can do more, you know, because the crowd are so vocal, and you can hear every little bit of slagging or every bit of encouragement from the stand. And I think that's just a little bit. It's probably no different if you're down in Ennis or if you're down in any other. But for Dublin lads, I think it's just a great extra motivation. And you really have the platform there just to show all the Dublin supporters what really Dublin hurling is about, and where it should be, and the quality in the team. And that's always we wanted to do. We wanted to just display exactly what we're doing and how good we really are. And against Kilkenny is no better.
Galatasaray was what we always called it, calling any time we were up there often.
Yeah, well, look, you try and make your home place like that, you know, and make it as difficult as possible for lads. But yeah, look, it was a place I love playing, and lucky enough to play a couple of championship games there. I'd say if you ask any of the Dublin footballers, they'd absolutely take a hand off to play a championship game in Parnell Park. Probably not going to happen now in the next maybe 10 years or ever again, but you know, when Parnell Park is full and it's rocking, there's no better place in my opinion anyway.
Can I just ask you, Conal, there's probably been a fair reliance on Donal Burke. You've played with him, you know how good of a player he is, but how much of a necessity is it for others to chip in? He's probably taking the bulk of the scoring load at the moment.
Yeah, he is, yeah. Like, he's come on some amount since he first came onto the panel, you know, but he I think the other lads around him know how good he is and the quality. So, like, if you're getting the ball, 9 times out of 10, he's somewhere loose. Like, I'm not sure how he actually gets into that pocket every time. And he's so accurate. Like, he just takes one look and he has a shot from everywhere. And at the moment, they're all going over. Like, it'd be a different case. I think when he came onto the panel first, he had that kind of attitude as well, which was like, you know, give me the ball and I'll shoot. But he was shooting and they were dropping short or they were going left and wide, and that kind of eats away at a lad's confidence. And then once that happens, everyone's on their back saying, listen, stop shooting, you know, you start passing around. But now he's in such a great position that, like, anytime anyone gets the ball and they see him, they're going to give him the ball. And like, that's a great position to be in for Donal himself. But look, he's going to be really targeted against Kenny. There's no doubt about it. But and because Parnell Park is probably that little bit tighter, it's hard to find those pockets of space to get off those scores. But look, he's been doing it so far. So I just really hope that he can keep doing it from play, because his frees are absolutely exceptional. From nearly the 45, his own 45 in, you'd nearly say you'd write it down and it's a score straight away.
Just to change tact a bit, Conal, you mentioned the Dublin footballers there a minute ago. You know, what's your view on how they're fixed ahead of their game against Meath next weekend as well? There seems to be a lot more positivity around the team, even though it was only Wexford, a Division 4 side. There's even the way they put them to the sword, especially in the second half. There seem to be kind of more positive noises around the team than there was during the league.
Yeah, there does. Yeah. Like, that's just the way it is. It's very fickle, you know. Like, you put one bad game and everything's you know, the worst in the world, but you start getting a good few performances back and things change very quickly. Look, I think, yes, it was a great performance against Wexford. It was probably more encouraging to see how they were setting up maybe defensively and in certain individuals going back to their best. Like, Fenton was excellent. Conor Callum was excellent. These lads, Dublin need these lads back now. But like, you know, you have to, all due respect to Wexford, like, that's, they're well down the table in Division 4. Like, so I don't think Dublin will be too worried that the scoreline there. I think Meath will probably bring a different challenge to it. And I suppose if you look back on and when Meath nearly beat Dublin there a couple of years ago, and I think from speaking to Meath people that they feel that they had a great chance of getting one over on them. They missed a couple of goal chances and things could have been a bit different. But it probably being like all Dublin Meath games, are bringing it to a life of its own to a certain degree. But look, ultimately, you'd have to say a game in Croke Park. If it was outside of Croke Park, I'd give Meath a great chance. But the fact that it's back in Croke Park, and Dublin are seemingly looking like they're getting back to some bit of form and getting injuries behind them and having calm back and probably get James McCarthy maybe start this weekend and Fenton playing well and the usual suspects, those leaders, you'd expect Dublin to win, but it won't be a cakewalk like they've had previous games.
Colin, just when you mentioned Conn, I'm sorry, I have to ask it because you see what he did for the footballers and what he's been consistently doing. Like, do you think he'll ever play hurling for Dublin? And if he did, I know Anthony Daly always references you coming back from the footballers to the hurlers as just even inspiring everyone around you on the squad. Like, what sort of an effect do you think it would have? I know it's maybe a bit hypothetical, but if he ever was involved with the Dublin hurlers.
Yeah, is he going to play with Dublin again or hurling? I've no idea. Like, I don't know. Yeah, he's obviously been playing with Kula, and for any time he plays with Kula, he is their main man. Like, he's getting the scores. He's the main reason in my eyes that they won the All-Irelands those times. Like, he was absolutely unmarkable. Now, he probably hasn't been playing enough hurling, I suppose, and things are getting a little bit harder for Kula. They're probably losing a few of their leaders, and the game isn't coming as easy to him. He's probably not getting the ball he wants inside. But look, if he came back and played for the hurlers, yes, he'd be a great addition. Would he be the same addition that he is to Cooler when he comes back? I don't know. It's a massive difference between playing club and inter-county. Like, to go from playing club maybe kind of a half a season every year to go and play in inter-county, it's a massive commitment. And not saying he wouldn't be able to do it, but it would be a huge challenge for him. And maybe it's a challenge that he'd want to take in a couple of years when he's pretty much nearly won it all at the football and he's still relatively young to go back. It'd be great to have him there. But I'm just not sure it's going to happen in the next couple of years.
And, you know, in terms of that, the club-county kind of split season, now obviously you're someone who's had a very storied club career as well as playing for Dublin in both codes. You know, are you a fan of the way they've done the season to give more time to club players?
I'm not sure. I've been very honest with you yet. For an inter-county player, I think to go play inter-county and then go back to your club, I think that's completely fine. And because all that nonsense where it was April was not a county season and you're back to your club, that never worked. County players or county managers were not releasing you back in time, and if you were, you were only going back for one session and coming back into the county and trying to keep it under wraps, and that didn't work. So everyone knew that. Does it work at the minute? Look, I haven't gone back to the club yet at the minute. I'm out injured, so I'm out for the last since the whole year. So I haven't really been training to really get a handle on that. But by all accounts, it seems to be okay at the minute for the club players. There's an awful lot of league games being played. They're all happy to be playing, and they know when the championship is going to be, and it's going to be relatively in good weather in the end of the summer. So the club player is kind of relatively happy. I'm just not sure. I know it probably doesn't answer your question, but I don't know, to be very honest, if it's working yet. I'd need to have a full season of it behind me.
Yeah, I think that's fair enough. I think a lot of people are waiting until the end of this year anyway to kind of cast judgment on it. Just before we let you go, then we might get a final prediction from you for the game in Parnell Park on Saturday. Do you think Dublin will beat Kilkenny?
I was saying earlier on, yeah, I think they have a great chance. But look, I think over the years, since I was a young lad, since when I think it was in 1998, I remember Dublin were favourites to beat Kilkenny and Parnell Park. I went to the game and Dublin were absolutely destroyed. So anytime Dublin are an early favourites, it never works. So I'm not going to tip them to beat Kilkenny this weekend.
reverse psychology.
But I think they have a great chance. I think if they get their team in order, if they pick the right team, and they go with the right mentality, they have an absolute super chance to turn them over. But the other side of it, Kilkenny are in a dangerous position. They probably feel hard done by what happened in Galway. and they need to get a result this weekend. And with Cody there, he's not going to be taking anything lightly. So I just don't know. You know, you probably go, let's just say, for the sake of it, I'll tip Kilkenny, but behind the scenes, I wouldn't be surprised if Dublin win.
Great stuff, Conal. Thanks so much for joining us.
Okay, no bother, lads. Cheers.
That's all we have time for on the throw-in this week, but we will be back later in the week with another podcast with Philly McMahon, looking ahead to all the football talking points next weekend. In the meantime, you can subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, SoundCloud, or listen on independent.ie. So until next time, thanks for listening, and goodbye.